Only one man owns that intro, and that is Steve Salisbury. He's in the studio, a regular, of course, with KB right throughout the year. Good to see you, Steve. Been a little while.
BP, it's always good to see you. Always good to see you. You're a tennis guy. I got a question for you. I think one of the biggest disgraces anywhere in sport these days is Nick Kyrgios. I think he's stupid, and I think he surrounds himself with moronic people, and hence the... You know, he doesn't get it, right? Doesn't get it. People around him don't get it. Certainly, you have a son who is that talented because he's got a lot of talent, clearly. You pull him aside and you go, look, you know, you're being a dickhead. And dickheads don't typically reach their potential.
No.
So do you buy, I mean, he was initially suspended for 8 weeks. Do you buy? Now he's decided, well, yeah, I'm going to go. I've got to get some rehab or got to get some treatment, some help. And coincidentally, that now means his suspension is 8 weeks. Do you buy, or now 3 weeks? Do you buy that he's legitimately seeking help, or is it just to reduce his suspension?
Well, look, he's a fascinating character. I've had a lot to say about Nick Kyrgios, Steve. My understanding is he is going down this track because he's got no choice. So I don't think he's necessarily doing it because he wants to do it.
He's being told he has to.
Well, he's told he has to. As Richard Ings tweets today, I have to say that in my long involvement in tennis, I've never seen a governing body refer a player for a psychological care plan. So these are unique circumstances.
Clearly.
I mean, there's only been one man that's been told to go and have a spell off the tour, and that was John McEnroe back all those years ago. So the ATP haven't necessarily handled these things very well. I mean, player behaviour in sport is always, you know, a topic of debate, and in tennis, there's been, you know, many instances, and, you know, Viktor Troitsky last week went on his second rant of the year and doesn't really cop anything. You know, Serena Williams attempts to, shove a ball down a linesman's throat and gets a little fine. So the ATP haven't got great history of saying, now that's outside of how we should be presenting our sport. And have some time out until you can actually conform to what we want to. So...
But don't you think, though, that in the other examples that you gave, that was, I mean, Serena Williams has been playing tennis now for 21 years, I think it is, right? 20, 22 years, whatever it is. Mm. So those, I mean, she, early in her career, she'd say things and a lot of cringeworthy stuff. But as she's gotten older and she's matured as a woman and she's become, I think, has a better sense of who she is in the sport and her place in it.
Yep.
Those types of... incidents are few and far between. But with Nick, it's like every time the guy gets on the court, he's going to go off the rails. And I think...
Right. These are different circumstances to any other athlete in tennis that we can measure.
So. Right. I'm not a fan of his. I just...
Well, it's hard to be.
To me, the most frustrating thing is watching somebody who's got it all piss it away. Mm. And, you know, I've said this for probably since I first saw him play, that... Australian public is dying for another Rod Laver. I mean, there's no, probably across the planet, there's no more tennis-loving nation than Australia. And all you've got to do is go out there, play your ass off, be graceful, you know, be dignified, and you're going to get, I mean, the Australians will love you. The sport will love you. Look at, I mean, Andre Agassi, when I was growing up, he was hard to watch because he said a lot of stupid things. Hmm. But once he became like a statesman. I mean, even now, I mean, another example, Leighton Hewitt. I mean, I watched Leighton Hewitt now. At some point, the last 4 or 5 years, it just switched because I used to always want him to lose because I couldn't stand him. Now I'm watching and I'm like, I love this guy. I mean, he gave 100% every time he was on the court. And he had, I mean, compare him to, say, Philippoussis. Leighton Hewitt probably had a tenth the potential as Philippoussis did.
Oh, no doubt.
But he was, because he was such a champ.
Yeah.
So he got the most of his talent.
So these comparisons, to me, Kyrgios is in another boat there. I mean, we're talking about Agassi and Hewitt and maturing. But there's the unknown of what Kyrgios will become because his circumstances are different.
You're right.
I mean, Leighton had his moments and Andre had his moments and they hated the game. And well, Andre did because his father pushed him into it.
Right.
But Kyrgios is a different kettle of fish. So we can't get a take on it's an easy throwaway line to say, yeah, no, he'll mature and he'll
I don't think he will. I don't think he's smart enough, unfortunately.
Hey,
but
let's talk some American sport because I'm always for the underdog.
Are you? Okay.
In sport.
Yeah.
Full stop.
I think everybody is.
So can the Cubs win two more games in Cleveland on the road and produce one of the great stories of the year, just to back up all the other underdogs that have achieved some great success in the world of sport this year?
In a word, actually two words, unfortunately, no. I don't think they can. I wanted them to, and I thought they were going to. For me, the validation of them being legitimate was beating the Giants. And you know, maybe I've oversold that, but the Giants, between 2010 and really this year, were the most clutch team in baseball. So when they were right, nobody was righter than them. And so they were a team that, I mean, they were a cockroach, the Giants. They just, you couldn't kill them. And they were down in so many playoff series. I mean, they I believe, now hold the major league record for most consecutive playoff series wins.
Yep.
I think they've got 11. And it is a... To me, to beat a team like that, that's got that clutch mentality, when you are the Cubs, who've had this history of losing, was pretty impressive. And then they went on to play the Dodgers. And the Dodgers, I don't like the Dodgers, but the Dodgers have Clayton Kershaw, who's one of the best there is. It's a well-run organization now, the Dodgers are. So then they go through and they beat the Dodgers, and you're thinking, well, you know, Cleveland won 9 fewer games. They've had injuries to their pitching staff. But what they've shown in the first 5 games of the series, Cleveland, is that they're a deeper team. They've got a better bullpen. I mean, I think if you take a look at the runs, I think it's like 15-7 across the 5 games. Most of those came in one game. I think the Cubs got Cubs had several in one. I think 4 in one game or something. So, yeah, it just doesn't look like it's going to happen. But I'll tell you what, I know everybody wants the Cubs because the Cubs are like the bull. Actually, the Cubs are the Bulldogs, Lister City, and Cronulla Sharks combined. I mean, they 108 years.
But Cleveland's also had
Cleveland. It's been a long time as well.
Yeah,
Cleveland, they've not won it since 1948.
Well, there you go.
So that's 68 years. So it's been a long time for
them
as well.
Yeah.
But I tell you what, baseball, like no other sport, needs a storyline.
Yep.
And is there a better storyline than the Cubs losing going into 2017? I don't think there is. So even though all of us, it sounds very cruel to want the Cubs to lose, I think in the interest of baseball and getting people to watch their games, I think the Cubs losing gives you that storyline going into 2017. What are they going to do? You know, Theo Epstein, the general manager, has done a fabulous job there.
Yeah.
Does he go out and get another arm? Does he get another bat? What's he going to do in free agency? So I think going into 2017, if they lose, that gives you something to think about. Whereas if they win, it's like, oh, okay, they won. And then the analogy I used the other day of this is, as you remember, if you're watching like a sitcom,
yep,
and there's a guy and a girl and there's this chemistry between them and they almost kiss on all these different shows, you keep thinking, are they going to kiss? Are they going to kiss? And when they finally do, people go, oh, okay, they kissed. And then the ratings drop. So if, you know, I know baseball, I think it'd be a great story if the Cubs won, but I think for baseball, it's actually a good story if they lose because it keeps people interested.
Let's have a chat to Michael in Essendon. Michael, you want to talk about the World Series?
I do. Steve, just after your opinion on how they decide home ground advantage, whether you think it's fair that it comes down to the All-Star game or...
No, I think
it should be always with the best record.
Michael, I think it's the stupidest rule in sport. So what Michael's asking about is, what do I think about the way that they determine the World Series home field advantage is which team, American League or National League, wins the All-Star game in July. So they leave an exhibition game to decide, in July when people aren't even playing, to determine who's going to have home field advantage in the World Series, which I think is ridiculous. The Cubs earned it. The Cubs won 103 games. They were the best team all season long. They deserve to have 4 of the 7 in Chicago, but because of this ridiculous rule that was instituted, I don't know, it's probably been over a decade now, I'm trying to think of the guy's name. It was the guy who managed the previous commissioner. What they're trying to do is that people weren't watching the All-Star game.
Yep.
and they tried to make it more interesting. Well, okay, we'll add meaning to this. The winner gets home field advantage throughout the playoffs. And then people went, really? And now that's the way it is. So a couple of years ago, Giants had a better record than the Royals, I think, yet they had to go to, had to play in Kansas City in Game 7. If there's a Game 7 this year, it'll be played in Cleveland. So, yeah, it's a really bad rule. But listen, baseball is doing better. They really are. Think about baseball. It's like all the other American sports. You've got stars, and the stars are promoted, especially the NBA. No league does it better than the NBA does. Mm. The NFL does it reasonably well, but the game itself is quite popular. Whereas baseball's been losing fans for the longest time, they don't really promote their players the way they should.
Welcome back at 23 past 10. Steve Salisbury with me, of course. We are looking at all things American sport. If you want to join us, 9429 1116, or send us a text, 0433 98 1116. The first race of 10 on Melbourne Cup Day coming up at 10:40. We'll get out to Flemington very shortly with Brian Martin. So, according to you, Steve, Cleveland just about there to win the World Series, Game 6 tomorrow morning.
It's interesting. I remember when the Warriors in the NBA were ahead of the Cavaliers 3-1. I was shocked. I thought, Cavaliers are the better team. Cavaliers are going to make this happen. They're more physical. And then Bogut went down, and it happened. So clearly, teams can come back from a large deficit. But with what I've seen from the Cubs, I think what they're going to need to do, it's kind of funny. Yesterday they played this game, and there's a bit of criticism. It's like baseball. Like, they eat their young. You know, it's like they sit there and they're criticizing Joe Maddon, who's a fabulous manager, and they're saying, "Well, why would you put in Aroldis Chapman in the seventh inning because he's the closer?" And it's like, you know, what if you do that? He's not going to be ready for tomorrow. It's like, well, you know what? If you don't put him in, there might not be a tomorrow. So you get in, and he's just a great manager, and so he's used Chapman, and so Chapman pitched more than he would have wanted. So there's the thought that, oh gosh, if he has to pitch tomorrow, you know, maybe he's going to be tired. But he's a closer. They're used to coming in.
Yep.
Maybe though with the weather, they might get a rain out and it gets pushed back a day, so he gets more time to rest. But they're going to need, I guess, the Game 6, I'm stating the obvious here, but Game 6 is pivotal because anything can happen in a Game 7. But I think probably the Cubs would be thinking, well, if we get on him early and get a few runs early, I don't know. They were the best team all season long, so... But that doesn't always. That's not always the thing. It's the team that gets hot late that usually wins. So, given what I've seen from the Indians, I think they're the better team. I think they're going to do it. But what I saw season long was that the Cubs were probably the best team. So,
okay,
yeah,
we're going to talk a bit about NFL and NBA. Hey, John at Hoppers Crossing has joined us. 10:25. G'day, John.
G'day, gentlemen. Steve, I'm enjoying the ride that the Cowboys are giving me, and probably the best thing about it is that. When they're in trouble, they're being led by two rookies, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I'm people seem to think that I'm anti-Dak Prescott, and I'm not anti-Dak Prescott. I think he's done a really good job, and I got to watch some of that game from yesterday last night, and he wasn't great in the first half, but when they needed him, he came through. So he's played really, really well, and then Zeke – Elliott, the running back, he's the best running back in the league at this point. I think the thing that people probably don't realize, though, is that offensive line is the thing. The guards, when you look at an offensive line, the guards, which are the two guys that surround the center, they blow open the holes for the running. And then the tackles, the two guys on the ends, are the ones who protect the quarterback while passing. That is like the best offensive line unit going. So they are... they're set up for success, and then Dak, in addition to how he's playing, he's kind of had this, I've heard some of the former players say he's got the intangible of bringing everybody together. So he could be special, and it's going to present the Cowboys with a very interesting decision when Tony Romo becomes healthy again.
Good on you, John. Thank you for that. Let's head to Ryan in Langwarrin. G'day, Ryan. How are you going?
How are we going, boys?
Very well.
Steve, massive Spurs fan. I just want your opinion on post Tim Duncan's career with Kawhi Leonard now becoming the major offensive weapon and coming out of his shell. How you think we're going to travel this year? I think we actually look fantastic, and he looked unstoppable this minute.
Yeah, I saw him. He was great against the Warriors, and I watched a little bit of his game against my Kings. Kawhi Leonard went to San Diego State, which is where I went, so I'm a huge Kawhi Leonard fan. I think he's been the best player on that team for 3 years now, and I think they're going to be great. I know that you know, Tim Duncan is a Hall of Famer and one of the top 10 players of all time, but in the last few years, clearly, his game had started to slip away because of his age and everything. But the Spurs, regardless of who they have in there, always find a way to be successful, and it's just the organization is so well run. I think that you guys are absolutely going to be there at the end. I don't think you win the West, though. I think the Warriors win the West. But I do think that the Spurs are going to be in the conversation.
Thanks, Ryan. What about Andrew Bogut in Dallas? 0-3. What, he had the 14 rebounds yesterday. What are you making of that sort of union?
I think the biggest mistake that the Warriors made was getting rid of Bogut. Certainly, they didn't want to pay him the huge money. But if people go back and look at it and they're honest with themselves, the series changed against the Cavs when he went down. And the reason for that is if you watch LeBron James through his career, he has a difficult time with big guys in the middle. And he doesn't like going inside against big guys. But as soon as Bogut left, when Bogut went down with the knee, he was able to exploit the fact that the Warriors had nobody down low that could stop him. So I think that everyone's like, oh, the Warriors, they went out and they got Kevin Durant. Well, they're still skinny. And yes, they've got the three best scorers in the league in Klay Thompson and Kevin Durant and Steph Curry, but there's more to basketball than scoring, and that was completely obvious in the finals last year. So I think that Dallas is a better team now because of the inclusion of Andrew Bogut, and I think that the Warriors are a worse team. Even though they went and got maybe the second-best player on the planet, they're still a worse team because they don't have the one thing that they needed last year.
Just, we're flicking around sort of the American sports. We've got a couple of minutes. What about a bit of Monday night football? Minnesota and the Bears going head-to-head, what, in about an hour or so's time?
I tell you what, the Bears are quite possibly the worst team in football. You'd get an argument from me as a 49er fan. We stink. And the Browns are 0-8. And as Bill Parcells says, you are what your record says you are. Yes. So at 0-8, they'd probably have to be considered the worst. But if, you know, the Niners are pretty bad. The Bears are terrible. And the issue with the Bears is nobody likes their quarterback. And he's just a cancer in the locker room, Jay Cutler. And the word came out this year that John Fox, their head coach, has kind of said, I'm done with Jay Cutler. I'm done. So that means that they don't have to pay any guaranteed money after this year, so he's going to be released, one would assume. So you've got sort of this quarterback coaching or quarterbacking a 1-6 team where he's a lame duck. So that's a team that could go 2-14. So and the Vikings are coming off a loss last week in Philadelphia. So at home against a division rival, I expect that the Vikings win that game by 3 touchdowns.
And I'll need about 20 seconds here. In a year where there's been so much unpredictability,
right?
Could Donald Trump prevail?
Oh,
he's making up ground in Florida, Stu. He's coming home with a late charge.
Yeah, I tell you what, the election is in 20 seconds. Could he? I didn't think. I was asked by Finney a year ago, what do you think about this? I said, I think he's taking the piss. I said, it's an ego-driven thing. And I think at one point, he probably woke up one morning and went, Jesus Christ, I won the Republican nomination. Yes. Who would have thought this? So, look, nothing surprises me anymore. Yeah. Nothing surprises me, so sure. I can't imagine how you go in and vote for that guy, but clearly people are going to, so there you go.
Good to spend some time with you.
I love it.